Welcome to All Sides. Teachers used to grade us. We didn't judge them, at least not institutionally. And most of us have grown up in a system of collective bargaining for teachers where their pay has been set by years on the job, levels of education, and job title. Now we're planning to turn the tables and begin judging them and, in part, basing their wages on their performance. It's called merit pay. Some say it's the savior. Others say it could do even more damage. The new two-year state budget in Ohio calls on every Ohio school district to adopt a new teacher evaluation system by the start of the 2013-14 school year. It must conform to as yet undeveloped framework for the State Department of Education or from the State Department of Education. So how can districts proceed until the state finishes its task? The framework will require that 50% of a teacher's evaluation be tied to student academic performance in accordance with the federal Race to the Top program. What's the magic of 50% based on performance? We'll talk about that. Joining us now is Ohio's 2011 Teacher of the Year, Tim Dove. Tim, with 30 years in the classroom, is part of the team that conceived and created Phoenix Middle School. It's an alternative middle school in the Worthington City Schools District. He also has taught and mentored Masters in Education students at Ohio State University. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with us is Kristen Van Hook. She's a senior vice president with the National Institute for Excellence in Teaching, which works on strategies for teacher evaluation and performance compensation. Welcome to the show, Kristen.
Thank you.
Let's get at the conflict. Is it the conflict of teacher evaluations in and of themselves, or the idea that wage levels will be tied to those evaluations? Tim, why don't we start with you?
I don't know that it's either of those. I think it's more of an issue of not knowing what the framework looks like. We've had teacher evaluations forever. In fact, our district's been working with Charlotte Danielson's work on frameworks. It's been around for a long time, where you look at basically four different domains. And teachers' evaluations are set up based on those domains, planning and prep, classroom environment, instructional pieces, and professional responsibilities. So teachers are kind of confused as to why the need for a shift in terms of evaluation.
Well, the evaluation, the idea that the evaluation could be based in part on student scores,
sure.
And also associating or connecting that to pay levels.
Sure. And what's interesting is in our state, just a few years ago, we had a master teacher program, and we also had a national initiative on getting board certified. And there was money attached to that in terms of as an incentive for good teachers being evaluated on the things that they do. And there was a money piece that was attached to that, which was quickly revoked after the system got started because it was too expensive. So teachers are getting kind of mixed messages about, okay, so if we do this and we do this and we show that we're doing this, then how does all this fit together in terms of the reality of the practice of how merit pay would work?
We're talking about teacher performance and corresponding merit pay with Kristen Van Hook. She is with the National Institute for Excellence in Teaching and also Ohio's 2011 Teacher of the Year, Tim Dove. Give us a call if you want to join the discussion. Tell us if you are for or against merit pay. We know it's not that simple, really, but we'd like to hear what you think. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Kristen Van Hook, you've been doing this for a while in different states. When you present your findings, when you present programs in different states, what's the feedback about conflict?
Well, I think it's important to take a step back and think about why this is all happening. And part of our view on what needs to some changes that need to take place within education. We're looking at a situation where teachers are expected to do more and more to work with a broad diversity of students to increase their skills. The job is becoming more difficult. And so one of the questions we looked at is for teachers like Tim and others who are award-winning, excellent teachers. How do we get more people like that and keep them in the classroom, especially in the highest need schools? And so we looked at a kind of a comprehensive approach. The Milk and Family Foundation, which was the initiator of this initiative, looked at a range of excellent teachers through their Milk and Award program and asked them, how do we get more people like you in the classroom? And the response kept coming back. It really isn't a simple single solution, evaluation or pay or professional development, that it all has to be part of a comprehensive system to support excellence. But the other thing they said is that in a profession where there's been a tradition of paying people the same regardless of performance, so that the best or the worst teacher who has the same years of experience and some other basics would get paid the same, and that creates kind of a disincentive to attracting and retaining some of the most outstanding teachers, especially in high-need schools. And so that was really the driver behind how can we recognize excellence, how can we support excellence. So our initiative, TAP, that we call the System for Teacher and Student Advancement, is really focused on two things. One, accurately measuring performance. And we often find teachers sometimes don't fully have all that information about their own performance, especially newer teachers. A lot of detail about how they're doing in the classroom in a variety of different things, whether it's questioning, grouping students, academic feedback, those kinds of things, and setting up school-based professional development to help them improve those skills, and recognizing and rewarding those who are able to, and this turns out to be quite a number, to improve their performance over time. And we're finding that teachers are very receptive to being evaluated when it's linked to a system to help them improve. And just quickly, our performance pay element is the concept there. There's kind of two broad categories. One is to differentiate pay so that teachers who take on leadership roles and responsibilities, like a mentor or a master, could be paid more. And the other piece is to recognize excellence through the opportunity to earn more based on a number of factors. And I can describe that in more detail, that performance pay piece, when we get to that.
One criticism when you talk about differentiating the pay in terms of the job description, one criticism has been that good teachers are turned into observers and judges and are taken out of the classroom, which is, kind of what you don't want to do in the system that we're talking about. Tim, have you found that as somebody who judges student teachers?
Well, of course. That's kind of the rub in terms of how do you do these evaluations. And from an administrative angle, there's this new process that people are looking at right now called a walkthrough, where there's a very quick administration walkthrough. They look for specific things. And teachers are a little leery about that as well, because it's like, wait a minute, a snapshot may or may not really talk about what's going on in a classroom over time. Then you get to merit pay conversations, and you talk about, well, who would be the ones who do this? And the first conversation is, well, the administrators would. And a lot of administrators are concerned about, okay, so how does that shift my job responsibility? They've always been responsible for evaluations. But with a whole new layer of evaluations, then that's pretty much what they're going to be doing all day. And then what happens to the other logistics piece of what their job is? Then the next layer is, well, then you have peers do it. And there have been a lot of programs around for years that have done those kinds of things as well, like the PDS program that I work with at Ohio State. There's others that are like PAR in Columbus City Schools have been around for a long time, where what you do is you look at how do you mentor teachers, how do you evaluate what's going on. And there's a whole set of issues about that, especially when you start looking at dividing out pay. As soon as money becomes a part of this, one of my arguments is then a lot of the true collaboration of trying to move to the next level holistically is compromised.
Because the idea is, and Kristen, pitch in, the idea is that people start to think only of themselves and cease to think of the group. They're thinking about how can I get that extra $5,000 next year, not how can I work better with the other teachers.
And that would be the worst case scenario. But yeah, I mean, it gets to the point where if you're in a collaborative situation with a teaming and integration, and you're really looking at how do you push an entire level together or a school together, all of a sudden in some situations, you'll have people saying, well, wait a minute, you're making more money doing this, so why don't you? And then you've lost a lot of that collaboration that you need in the conversation.
Kristen?
Well, I think, I mean, Tim raises some great points, but, you know, we've found, it's funny because I think that there has been a sense that that's been a concern over the years, but we found in the schools we've been working in that it's possible to set it up in such a way that that doesn't happen. One of the things Tim had mentioned in the beginning, the administrative load of evaluations, well, we thought about that, and a lot of people have said in the past, well, peers can't be evaluating their colleagues because that wouldn't be fair, there'll be bias, et cetera. And we're finding that that actually is not the case, that teachers are able to review their peers and to be accurate in their evaluations. In some cases, you know, during our trainings, we find that the teachers are initially more accurate than the principal in evaluating teachers. So I think that it's important to consider how those resources are allocated and then what those people are doing. So we made a decision that the evaluators would be the same people providing professional support, and that creates kind of a better use of resources in the school, so that if you have, for example, a master teacher in our TAP schools, they help to drive the professional development and provide professional development at the school level. They also are involved, along with mentors and the principal, in evaluation. And we're finding that this creates more of a collaborative environment because we've got 90 minutes a week of these professional learning groups that are led by a master teacher. But here's the key difference. In the past, a lot of this professional development was set up to be a collegial weekly process, but there was no one really responsible or no one in charge of kind of driving the process and following up. So when we looked at this, we said, and the teachers in our program said, one of the challenges is professional development is often delivered, but is it ever translated down into the classroom? Do teachers actually go and try it in their classroom? And then what's the impact on student achievement? And a lot of times they need support in making those connections and making that link. So what we do through the Master and Mentor Teachers in our program is to go into those teacher classrooms every week. Doors are open in a TAP school, and that's a big change, I think, in many schools. But then teachers are given support. If they're struggling with implementing a particular concept, the master teacher is there either to observe them if they're a more expert teacher, or even to come in and do a demonstration lesson that they can watch, or to team teach, so that you're really helping someone practice. This is the key here. A lot of this is about practicing and improving your skills over time. It's not like teachers are holding back some great strategy that if you paid them more money, they suddenly would do it. This is about helping people to systematically improve over time.
You spoke earlier about the fact that all teachers, all things being equal in the traditional system, have about the same shot of making the same money depending on their education level and how long they've been at it, and that's a disincentive to some people who are looking for a profession. But others have said that, what about the idea and the question, is teacher a calling? Are teachers really motivated by money in the first place? And so then why would that motivate them in the second place? There was a study in a trial in Nashville by the National Center on Performance Incentives. It offered bonuses of $15,000 to teachers if they could get higher scores from students. And over a three-year period, there was no difference. The bonus didn't seem to matter, ultimately. The teachers weren't motivated by that.
Well, I think what's fascinating about that study, and we looked at it closely, mm-hmm. is that you go back to this issue of measuring performance in the first place. Many of the teachers in that study didn't believe that they were going to be able to improve, or they thought they were already operating at some of the highest levels. And as you know, the criticism of teacher evaluation over the years has been everybody's rated at the highest category. So, of course, teachers think, you know, every year I get a very high rating, I'm operating at a high level. And one of the most difficult conversations we have when we first go into a school is to say, we have a scale of 1 to 5. 3 is proficient teaching. And it's a struggle to change that culture and get people to think about, yes, there is a lot of room for improvement for everybody. Even the most proficient teacher always has room for improvement and growth. So that's a conversation that has to take place in schools if we're expecting teachers to have these dramatic increases in student achievement and kind of reach these very high goals we're setting. We've got to work with them to reset expectations in terms of their own practice, in the sense that you know, if everyone's told they're already at the top, of course a bonus isn't really going to make any difference. They'll just assume it's I'll get it or I won't get it. It's kind of a random thing, and that's what was shown in that study. And so I think one of the things that's important to do is to kind of reset these expectations, make it accurate so that performance is truly accurately measured. Sometimes people in these schools who score in the lower range on both student value-added measures, student growth measures, as well as their own practice, are shocked. I mean, for years they've been told that they're an excellent teacher, and suddenly there's some more real information here in front of them. And so I think a lot of teachers really want that information. They want to see what can they do. We're not talking about kind of judging the individual. We focus very much on that lesson. So if you're evaluated over the course of an hour-long lesson, we think it's important to watch the entire lesson, not just to kind of drop in. And we recommend that teachers are evaluated 4 to 6 times a year. So this is a process of improvement. Okay. You're not coming in to catch someone. You're coming in to say, what are you doing that could be improved in that classroom?
We're talking about teacher performance and corresponding merit pay. It's being called for in the new 2-year state budget. If you have a question or comment for our guests, Kristen Van Hook, she's with the National Institute for Excellence in Teaching, and also Tim Dove, he's Ohio's 2011 Teacher of the Year. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
FM is your source for NPR news and local news. Stay up to date with issues impacting life in Central Ohio. The award-winning WOSU News team keeps you connected to the community, and the State House News Bureau has the latest in-depth coverage of state government. Listen to news from across the country and from our own backyard on 89.7 NPR News and streaming online at WOSU.org.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's 80 degrees, and we'll see a high of 92 today with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The heat index is going to make it feel as hot as 102. There's also a chance of a pop-up shower or storm tonight, a low of 74.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Home Instead Senior Care, helping citizens in their home, the hospital, independent or assisted living facilities. More at 1-800-4-SENIORS, Home Instead. To us, it's personal.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about evaluating teacher performance, corresponding that to wages. Joining us in the studio is Ohio's 2011 Teacher of the Year, Tim Dove. And also with us, Kristen Van Hook. She's with the National Institute for Excellence in Teaching. We have some calls to get to, and we will do that. So stay with us. But what do you think about merit pay for teachers that's being called for in the 2-year state budget? Tim, before the break, we were talking about the idea of money as an incentive to teachers, the idea of is it a calling or a job? And after 30 years in the business, it was kind of the same way with journalism for me. I bet you didn't come across very many people that said they were getting into it for the money.
No, it would definitely be a calling. I think most teachers would tell you that the reason that they wanted to get into this business was a love of children, an understanding of the importance of public education in our country in terms of what that affords our nation. However, at the same time, and this is where this gets ugly quickly, is when you talk about pay, you talk about compensation. Anybody, I don't care, public, private sector, you do things for reasons, and maybe compensation isn't at the top of the list, but you also don't want to be taken advantage of. You also want to be in a place where you feel like your efforts are at least recognized to some degree, and compensation is a piece of that. Teachers spend a lot of their own money for lots of things. They spend time outside of contracts to do a whole host of things, and they've always done that. So when you start talking about only the money aspect of it in a conversation, it sounds like money grubbing, but that's really not what it's about. The primary focus for the vast majority of teachers out there, I would argue, is it's a calling. It's something that we feel that we're contributing to our society in a very, very positive way. But at the same time, whenever you talk about changing how all this is going to work, people get a little nervous when you look at the history of how that's played out.
Kristen Van Hook, when you talk about accurately measuring teacher performance and you associate it with pay, does it bother when you're going to the districts around the country that you work with through TAP? Is that something that bothers people? They want to improve and they want the mentoring and they want the ability to improve, but is associating it with pay always the way districts go?
Well, you know, I think it's such an interesting conversation, and I do think there needs to be a shift in this conversation, because this is the most important profession. Teaching is the most important profession in our country right now. Our future depends on it. And so, of course, many people go into teaching as a calling, but to pay them less than they should be paid is ridiculous. I mean, we just can't support all the goals. We can't reach all the goals we're setting and then expect that we're not going to be increasing teacher pay. So how to do that? Do you just give everyone an across-the-board raise? Well, there isn't a lot of public support for that, and I think you could argue that that wouldn't be a good use of resources. And so, you know, we started to look at what are some ways to give teachers an opportunity to earn more pay. Now, I think it's critically important, because the job is low paying to begin with, that there be a solid base compensation. But then above and beyond that, you know, a teacher like Tim, we'll see how he responds to this, but why wouldn't some of your most excellent teachers be compensated at a higher level? And I agree, you have to be very careful how you do that, through a combination of group and individual incentives, which is the way we set it up in TAP schools. But I really think this concept that the teachers are not necessarily going to be paid more, and that it's going to only, you know, they're only going to go into it for a calling, we just can't reach the goals we've set if we don't address that question.
Rachel in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Yeah, I'm an aspiring teacher right now. I'm just started the STEM master's program at Ohio State,
which is the engineering, mathematics, science.
Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Yeah, and so this is very informative to me. And I would just like to say that, just merit pay, in the sense that, like, there are incentives for, I think it'll have too many perverse, like, consequences. Like, I mean, there was recently the scandal in Atlanta with the teachers, you know, like, and it was just widespread. It was completely systematic.
The cheating scandal.
Yes, right. Yeah. And I just think that, you know, we just need to kind of start at the beginning, try to recruit, like, the best and the brightest, because I've always liked science. I was going into research initially, and it wasn't really working out for me. I wasn't happy. But all my life, you know, I thought of, you know, teaching, and everyone said, oh, you don't want to teach. You want to teach at the college level because, you know, the students won't appreciate you, blah, blah, blah. You would be like, you know. So I feel that there needs to be, like, a cultural shift to recruit, like, our best and our brightest to become teachers, and not, like they were saying, that it's, like, this noble calling that you should.
But how much does money figure into it, Rachel?
I think, it's a calling, but I think for the amount of effort that's put into it, it should be more valued, I think. I was talking to a friend of mine from Korea, and she was shocked when I told her, you know, that teachers do not make nearly anything like what doctors make or what lawyers make, even though, you know, some teachers go through very similar levels of training and education. So I think, again, like, it's something that we just need to start from, like, the ground up, and cultural shift.
Kristen Van Hook, I wondered, and thank you very much, Rachel, for that call. How much does the work you're trying to do complicated by this discussion that has really intensified over the last few years about teachers being overpaid and how angry a lot of people are out there about how much teachers get? They get the summers off, they, you know, all of the criticisms about what a hunky-dory job they have and how they're all overpaid for it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think as your caller pointed out, I mean, to really make the changes we're looking to make, we need to make this a much more appealing job to talented people to choose and to stay in. And the money is a part of that. And so how do we change the public perception as well? And we've found that in a lot of the sites where we're implementing this program, that the public responds well to this concept that you're going to offer the opportunity to make additional compensation based on performance, based on a range of measures, multiple measures of performance, not a single test. You know, we look at, as I said, these classroom observations over the course of the year, individual student gains in that classroom, school-wide gains to promote teamwork. So multiple different measures of performance. But to give people the ability, I think the public responds to the concept that, okay, we're paying some of our best teachers who work in some of our most challenging schools more. We find there's a lot of public support for that.
From Kelly on Facebook, kind of to Rachel's point, will firefighters get paid according to how many fires there are, or doctors only get paid if their patients are free of disease, or police officers get merit pay when crime is down? How about this? Politicians only get paid for legislation that isn't redundant, not an unfunded mandate, and it actually is constitutional. An email from Samantha. How does the merit pay program affect people like school counselors? School counselors provide an essential role in getting children back in the classroom and ready to learn. How will they be evaluated for raises? And are they still subject to merit pay even though they are not teachers? And I think the same question's been asked of, I guess what we think of as non-academic, you know, art teachers, music teachers, speech therapists, all a whole realm of people who don't teach courses that are tested. Tim, has that been raised in your school?
Yes, that's a wonderful question. See, because what Kristen's talking about with the TAP program actually addresses a lot of the things that you're talking about. Having multiple levels and multiple times of evaluation and peer evaluation. I mean, a lot of the things she's talking about is a really good program that we also do through Ohio State. We do it through our own school. It's a part of our evaluation process. So, you know, if you're going to look at how it all fits, it's like, so who's responsible for the evaluations, and then what kind of money is tied with what? I think the reason that you have such a volatile conversation right now is there's no plan in place. I mean, Kristen's talking from knowledge in terms of the program that she's talking about.
Where it has been instituted.
Absolutely. And there's some really great components to that. The problem is in Ohio right now, when we're talking about a budget, when we're talking about, you know, SB 5, you know, and how all that fits with collective bargaining and, you know, all these other pieces in Ohio, a lot of it's just up in the air right now. And nobody really can definitively talk about how it all fits together, and then you have the issue of fairness and what is it people want and how do taxpayers pay for this, and, you know, if you get it all set up, then is it going to be seen as too expensive, and so it's an easy line item, it's gone. So it just creates a whole lot of questions, and it is a very holistic piece. I mean, good teachers are interested in that conversation. How do we make our schools better? How do we make our kids achieve higher? How is it that we make sense out of all of this? The problem I think a lot of folks are having is the idea of the lowest common denominator fix. You know, what about the districts that are doing well? What about the kids that are achieving well? Then we're gonna lay this over the entire structure, and so that I think those are some of the questions and why people are a bit nervous about all of this.
Kristen Van Hook?
Yeah, I echo what Tim just said. I mean, if you don't do this right, then you probably shouldn't do it. You know, just instituting, for example, you use the term merit pay. I know you're doing that on purpose. I mean, I think it has a lot of connotations of previously failed programs where people just set it up as a bonus based on a test score, not linked to improvement, you know, not linked to an accurate evaluation system, and it was a total failure. So you have to do these things in a way, as Tim was saying, it's holistic, and you've got to set it up in a way where everything's tied together, that there's fairness in the system. For example, in our process, we require a 75% vote of the faculty before they institute this program at their school. And so teachers are on board, and they understand what the program is, and they're committed to making it work. So I think...
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, anyhow, I think it's very important that this be considered. I mean, people won't improve if they're not motivated and planning to improve. In other
so
words, that's
in,
the first
if,
step.
And the buy-in is a big part of that. How do you, when you get to 75%, is that after months of working with the teachers and educating them about what you want to do?
Sure, but actually the real key thing is they go and see another school that's doing this, and they say, this is not scary. This is great. I want to be in a school like this. That's what happens. I think the problem is, as Tim was saying, it's all the unknowns. Well, is this going to be fair? Well, you know, what if this, what if that? All the unknowns make it so difficult to move forward. If you go and you see, okay, this is specifically the kind of support I'm going to get. These are the opportunities. This is how it'll be structured. Then we find teachers are, in a lot of the schools we're working with, obviously, very eager to participate. We often have votes far above 90%.
Hal in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, and thanks for waiting.
Hi, good morning. Nice conversation. Very sad topic, in my opinion. I think this whole conversation is just one more manifestation of the systemic propaganda agenda, red herring that we've got going on in this country that is a result of different dimensions of public employee bashing. You hear the same arguments about recruit and retrain in the private sector, but you don't see any reform. And if they're going to do economic reform, it needs to start in the private sector with CEOs, Wall Street traders, the professions that make the money, the big money, and, you know, do something other than just pick and choose and cherry pick against public employees who were never that highly paid to begin with, in truth. Wall Street bankers and Wall Street traders are making more money than they've ever made, but they don't talk about any reform in that part. So let's start in the private sector where the money is, and then let that trickle down to the public sector. That's how I feel about this.
Hal, thanks for your call. Kristen Van Hook, you know, in Ohio, the conversation hasn't been just about teacher merit and merit pay and teacher performance, that kind of thing. There's, of course, Senate Bill 5, and I know you're in public policy as well, and you've probably heard of it. It would end collective bargaining as we know it for public employees throughout the state, and it's added this other level of conversation to it. It's not a pure conversation just about education anymore. And I was wondering, in other states and other school districts where you've implemented your program, has it been with this overarching issue of politics and union disagreement over unions in general?
Well, certainly, you know, I think your caller is accurate in that a lot of these issues are now playing a larger role in this discussion. I think one of the things we've done is we try right from the very beginning to coordinate and work closely with unions because we feel that that's an important piece of creating a system that has the buy-in of teachers. So I think that's an important step there, as well as our emphasis on actual teacher agreement before they're implementing such a system. So I know that what you're talking about in terms of the evaluation system and some of the other pieces is not all clearly connected, but mm-hmm. I guess I would say that to the extent it's possible to do that, you know, that these pieces be...
Kristen? We have lost Kristen, but we will get her back. And Tim, that leaves what do you think about the political climate right now and how that could affect the ability to institute these new performance measurements and merit pay programs?
It seems to me that the catchphrase of the time is people always want to talk about these uncertain economic times. I mean, frankly, we have issues with our economy straight across the board, private and public. But what's interesting is it's like the idea of when the watering hole gets smaller and smaller, people look differently at each other. The animals look differently at each other. I think that's part of what we're dealing with right now. I would still argue in education, being in a classroom teacher for 30 years, I'd like to know when we haven't had uncertain economic times. We've always been asked to work for things for less. We've always had programs cut. We've always had jobs cut. We've, you know, work smarter, hard. I mean, that's just a part of the culture of what goes on. So the question then becomes, how do you use the limited resources that you have the best that you can? And I think that's part of what this debate is about, or this discussion is about, because the way our schools are being funded isn't being changed. So when you start looking at local taxes as what primarily funds your public employees, you know, when the watering hole gets smaller, the animals look differently at each other. So I get nervous when we start talking up in the budget about things like charter schools or for profit education. I don't understand as a taxpayer, much less as a teacher, how that's helping us in uncertain economic times. You know, from what I understand from their website, TAP costs $250 to $400 per student to initiate. It's a wonderful program, but I'm not sure my district would say, hey, somewhere between $2 and $4 million, let's do this. They might, but there's got to be some cost-benefit kinds of things that people would definitely be looking at.
Kristen Van Hook, are you there?
Yes.
I want to get back with you on that. We have to take a break. Just wanted to make sure you were there. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
FM is your all-day NPR news station. Listen to local and national news all day, every day. And you can hear the best in classical music on Classical 101. Listen to your favorite composers 24 hours a day and 7 days a week. It's 89.7 NPR News and Classical 101 from WOSU Public Media. For more information, visit WOSU.org.
And this is All Sides with Ann Fisher. Hour two of All Sides begins in 20 minutes. Is there a natural diet? A look at the so-called caveman diet on hour two of All Sides beginning at 11 o'clock.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Jazz Orchestra. Jazz Zoo continues with Rhapsody in Zoo, a Gershwin celebration featuring Bobby Floyd and Kelly Crum de la Veras this Friday, July 22nd at 8 p.m. at the Columbus Zoo. Tickets and details at jazzartsgroup.org.
It's 80 degrees under cloudy skies. We're going to see a little bit of sunshine and some clouds. Also a chance of showers and thunderstorms popping up today, a high of 92. With the heat index, it's going to feel as hot as 102 degrees. There's also a chance of a shower or thunderstorm tonight, a low of 74. And a slight chance of rain for Wednesday, otherwise sunny and another hot day with a high of 95. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about teacher performance and corresponding merit pay. It's been called for, some kind of measuring scheme has been called for in the budget. They want school districts to get this put together by the 2013-2014 school year. Of course, they're all waiting for the Department of Education to come up with its sort of template for a plan like this. Joining me today is Ohio's 2011 Teacher of the Year, Tim Dove, and also Kristen Van Hook. She's with the National Institute for Excellence in Teaching, and which puts forth the TAP program, goes into school districts. And Tim Dove just referred to the cost of a TAP program. Kristen, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to that.
Sure, thanks. And I just wanted to say a quick thing before jumping into the cost discussion. Mm-hmm. I agree there's public frustration with the lack of growth in student achievement. I mean, this is what drove a lot of the movement behind NCLB, wanting to create more accountability. And I think that one of the important things to think about, given the time we're in and the difficult economic times, the cost issues, et cetera, is we're really setting some extremely high goals in terms of student achievement. We have to approach this a different way. The old structure of how we drew people into teaching and tried to keep them there, especially, again, in the high-need schools, just doesn't seem to be working. We're not seeing the kind of growth that we're expecting in terms of growth to goals. So this is a whole different conversation about how do we support a really dramatic increase in student achievement, and we need to think differently about how we do that in terms of how we use our resources. So in terms of TAP, yes, $250 to $400 a student is our estimated cost. Of course, that varies based on what's already in place in a school. If there's already a position, for example, that could be used as the master teacher position, that lowers the cost. Mm-hmm. But we look at it this way. If you're running a school that costs about, you know, $3 million a year, it makes sense to consider spending somewhere in the range of $300,000 to say, I can run this school as a school that's not meeting my achievement goals, or I can try to do something dramatic to try to meet those achievement goals. And we have found through our results and some of the research we've done and basically the last 10 years of what we've been doing in schools that TAP can help to drive those kinds of achievement growth levels. And so we would make the argument that it's worth reallocating your budget, thinking about how you're spending money. Are you spending your professional development dollars effectively? Should you be sending people out to lectures and conferences? Is that the best way to do professional development, or should you build that capacity in your school? We need to rethink a lot of how we're spending the current dollars, and I agree it's a difficult time because there's not a lot new on the table, but there have to be some ways to say there's got to be a more effective way to structure this. And I think a lot of the results that have come out recently about the lack of student achievement growth or the inaccuracy in teacher evaluation, clearly there's some room for improvement in some of these areas.
Tim Dove, you helped conceive and create a whole new school in the Worthington City Schools, and there was a lot of pushback. I mean, not everybody agreed that doing it a new way was a good idea. They didn't necessarily like it, and I was wondering, are there any lessons from that experience that you could bring to the idea of the bring to the discussion that we're having today?
Well, Phoenix pushed a lot of reform pieces. I mean, when we moved to mastery grading, when we moved to full integration, not only between classes at a grade level, but across grade levels, when we start looking at fine arts in a whole nother way. Yeah, there were an awful lot of things holistically that we took on at the same time. But there was a lot of support from our board, to their credit, that one, allowed us to try it. It's been very successful. Granted, our day is a lot longer. And coming back to Kristen, no, we make the same amount of money as everybody else in Worthington. Because we're still Worthington school teachers. But one of the things I think that is a business model that does work in public education as a result of my experience with Phoenix is the key, and I think Kristen's been pushing at this also in terms of how the TAP program works. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kristen, but it really has some to do with an autonomy, a true professional autonomy for people who are experienced in things that work for kids. And we became mentors for one another. We were the ones that questioned one another. And that process can not only sets up new pieces that make sense, but also continues that development of what makes sense. Our mantra kind of has turned into, well, that makes sense, let's do that. Because too often I think we get stuck with doing things that don't make sense. And if we know it doesn't make sense, then stop doing it. I mean, it sounds very basic, but that's really what we need to be doing more in schools.
Jeff from Westerville, you're a teacher and you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. Yes, I should qualify that I'm a post-secondary teacher, but I am coming at this from two different perspectives. One of the things that we do in post-secondary is we rely heavily on student evaluation, and yet I haven't heard any part of this in the discussion about merit and how to determine merit for K-12 teachers. And I think we dismiss sometimes the ability of students, especially at the high school level, but even at the junior high level, to be able to discern who is a good teacher and who is doing not so well. I have a daughter who's in high school, and even as early as eighth grade, she came home and told me about a science teacher who said, "Dad, she's demeaning to students. She's belittling us. We don't learn that much. She leaves students behind." And yet she had what I call the little orphan Andy syndrome, that when an administrator came in or a colleague came in, she turned on smiles and said, "Look what all everybody's learning and look at how well they're doing." I wonder if your guests would comment on the importance of student evaluation in all of this process.
Kristen Van Hook, does that play a role in the TAP program?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. We're looking at that. I think right now our measures of teacher performance, as I mentioned, we use 50% we base on these series of classroom evaluations over the course of the year, and 50% on student growth, both individual classroom were available and school-wide. We are looking closely at the Gates Project. The Gates Foundation is funding a project that's looking at a number of other measures, including student evaluation. And so if that shows promise and can be related to student growth, student achievement, learning, those kinds of things, we're interested in looking at that. We're always kind of open to considering other ways of measuring teacher performance.
Tim, what do you think about that?
I think the caller has a good point here. When at my school, what we do is we have three evaluations at the end of the year. One is on basically what have they learned over the school year. We do that through concept mapping that happened at the beginning of the year with some reflective writing, in addition to their scores and OAA and so on. One is a conversation about school environment, school climate, in terms of things that worked for them, didn't work for them. But then we also do an evaluation on teacher style. Again, what works for them and what doesn't work for them. But one of the things that you also, I don't disagree with the caller. However, one of the things that you do need to concern yourself with is when you're developing a staff, one of the things that you want, I think, is you want everybody to have the same philosophy of what makes sense for kids. But you also want different styles so that a student, it's kind of like that notion of between all of us, we've got it covered, where a student can feel very comfortable with some staff member in terms of working through issues or concerns or whatever, and then that staff member becomes an advocate for that kid because the styles may not play out. Like I'm more of a fast-paced, loud, moving, crazy person in class, and for some of my students who are more reserved, thoughtful, chill, you know, I tend to scare them at first. Once they find out that what I say is what I do kind of thing, then we're much better. But we're not interested in creating, you know, 150 Mr. Doves in terms of style. A personal style is very important. So whether things work or don't work with staff, you also need to be careful about, you know, what does that entail? What is going on? You know, do I have a kid who I've questioned and we've pushed their ideas to the point where they were a bit uncomfortable, and then it goes home as he's picking on me. You know, so it's
that, subjective, like it's so much
very,
else.
It's
is.
Very subjective. However, the caller has a good point. You know, overall, there are some definite signs that kids can help with what's going on.
I just wanted to jump in quickly on that, just briefly. I think the same thing tends to happen with teacher evaluation. People kind of assume you can just walk into a room and in 5 minutes you know if that's a good teacher or not. Well, you know, maybe someone who's extremely experienced can, but there is value in looking at actual data. So I think would never want to, you know, weight one thing too heavily that was a real subjective measure. You know, you want to look at, we've certainly had situations where someone was viewed as the best teacher in the school and suddenly they come back and their student growth numbers are terrible. And they're the first one to say, well, what am I doing wrong? How can I improve? But again, I think that's why you need these checks and balances, looking at multiple things.
That's a very good point.
Thank you, Jeff, for that call. We have a couple emails I wanted to get to. They bring up some other issues. One is from Ben. It says, he says, it was mentioned that part of the merit pay corresponds to student test scores. How can an AP teacher teaching the best students be on the same scale as a special needs teacher teaching the lower level students? And that brings in that issue of value added. You know, what about that? And also, how do you get credit for making up for the losses from the teacher the year before? In other words, you're getting, and how can you make up for the fact that you have a classroom sometimes with as many as 30 kids, if you're lucky, many fewer, but that are all coming to you with different needs and different levels of education. How do you measure that in TAP, Kristen?
Well, the way we looked at it is clearly you can't look just at proficiency, because then the teachers who have students who are operating at the highest level at the beginning of the year would get all the recognition and pay at the end of the year. That's obviously not workable. So we had to move and wanted to move to a measure of growth, and I think you're seeing this in other areas too. Nothing's perfect, of course, but the idea being that you would try to measure the growth that students were able to achieve over the course of that year with that teacher, so that a teacher teaching the lowest achieving students would have the same opportunity to show growth as a teacher teaching high achieving students. The value added that a lot of our schools use, it's a school choice what system they use. They make that decision themselves. Many of them use a system called EVAS, run by Bill Sanders and colleagues. And what that system does is looks at 3 years of student data. I'm not an expert in this, so I'm going to give you the basics. 3 years of student data, and then predict how that student would operate the next year. Of course, things can happen, a hurricane, other things. So he also uses control schools to look at what happened with similar students in similar schools that year. But again, the effort being made to say, what would you expect that student to do over the course of that year, and was a teacher able to add value? And just one other quick thing about the data, we find teachers love to get this information because it's broken down in their class. How did the lowest students in your class do? How much growth? What about the middle? What about the highest? And they really like to look at that because some teachers might be doing great and getting growth with the lower achieving students, but wow, the higher achieving students in my class are stagnating. What can I do to improve that? This kind of data down at the classroom level hasn't been given to teachers in, many times in the past, and they really can use it effectively.
And Tim, I wanted you to respond to that as well, but just including that, how do you, what if the value that you've added isn't something that's measured on testing? In other words, maybe you've brought a kid out of their shell. Maybe you've helped a kid, you know, explain themselves. There's all kinds of things that could be not necessarily measured on the tests.
Yeah, I have a colleague, Bev Drexel, who she and I tease about that all the time. It's when you see things that happen in a kid's development as a human being, and we would kind of smile at each other and say, well, you can't find that on the test. That's something we ought to be looking at. Is what are those intangibles that make that are a huge part of the success of a student as they grow older? And can that be evaluated in some way, shape, or form? Going back to the caller, Jeff from West, actually, student evaluation piece, that may be, if it's well designed, something that makes sense in terms of, so where are the kids coming from and what kinds of things how have they grown as a person? Not only in terms of the content understanding or the skill acquisition, but also how they actually function in not only in the classroom, but in the world in general.
Kristen?
I would just add to that. I agree with that, but I think we have to be realistic, too, about what can be measured accurately and fairly. And so I think there's going to always be the art, some part of the art of teaching that is not captured. And I think that's just the reality, and that we try to capture as much as we can, just as with student testing. We judge students based on how well they do on the test. That obviously doesn't capture everything at all, and those tests need to be improved. We always need to improve, but we need some measures that can be arguably kind of standardized and fair and accurate, especially if we're going to base part of this, base pay on part of this.
Right, and that's part of the issue for teachers. It's like, so if you're going to evaluate the job of a teacher, why are we not able to evaluate the entire holistic job of a teacher? And when those pieces are left out, there are a lot of good teachers saying, well, wait a minute, you know, not everything. I mean, we still are dealing with the testing. We're still dealing with the scores. We're still dealing with the intellectual growth. But you're also dealing with social and emotional growth of people because that's the function of a school. You bring up a good point. I agree. It's where's the qualitative data and where's the quantitative data and how do those two fit together in terms of mixed methods?
Tim Dove, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Tim Dove. He's Ohio's 2011 Teacher of the Year. Also, Kristen Van Hook, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Kristen Van Hook, she's Senior Vice President with the National Institute for Excellence in Teaching. And thanks for listening. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.